Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All stream directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT.
Welcome to All About Android. This is episode 22, recorded on Monday, August 22nd, 2011. This is your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Eileen Rivera.
I'm Jason Howell, and we do not have Ron on the show today, unfortunately.
He's flown the coop. He's gone.
He flew the coop, yeah. Or rather, he went to his second home, it seems. He lives in New York when he's not in the Bay Area. So.
Yeah. We miss you, Ron. And
we miss you
wherever
you are,
too bad you're not here, because we'd have a rockin' show today. And in his place, we brought back Nicole Lee. Thank you so much, Nicole, for being on the show. You guys know her from CNET and CNET's Dialed In podcast. Hello again.
Hello. Hello. It was great to see you again.
I know. We just had a big TWiT grand opening party last night, so I'm not going to make any excuses. I'm here. I'm ready for the show. I'm not hungover.
Yes.
How about
no,
you?
No. I'm perfectly, you know, not hungover.
And neither are
See,
you, right,
I can't
Nicole?
Even talk. That's how wrong I am.
No, not at all. Not at all.
No, well, we had a great time.
Perfectly functional.
Yeah. No, we're back. We're ready. There's lots to talk about today. This week we're going to be discussing more Android numbers, and we'll be chatting with Wim Labs and talking about wearable Android, the HP tablet as a Android device. Is that real? What's going on with that? And in the arena, we're talking about sexy cloud storage apps. You know you want to know about Dropbox and SugarSync and all that stuff.
It's undeniable that cloud storage, as unsexy as it may be, is really, really useful. And
it is
a lot of people use it. So we're going to dive into some of the main players there.
All right. So let's go ahead and dig in since we have a guest in just a minute. Tony, I think we'll start with our news. While we were prepping the show, I found an article, a new study on Android.
Great.
Numbers, numbers, numbers.
Another
I know you
study.
Guys love this. No, I don't love this either. But, you know, take the numbers however you want to. But today, research firm NPD finds Android was running on 52% of all smartphones last quarter. Now, this is only U.S. numbers. iOS, in their research, is sitting at 29% market share, and BlackBerry came in third with 11%. This is all just got released today. And also interesting to note that they don't really talk about vendors so much, but they did pull out some numbers with respect to Motorola, and mostly because of the recent acquisition that Google had. And their numbers were that the share, Motorola Mobility share, dropped from 15% to 12%. We kind of knew about this. We talked about this last week, I think, when we talked about the acquisition, that, you know, their numbers were down. Why did they buy them? Blah, blah, blah. It was the patents. So there's no real surprise there. But, you know, that's probably, numbers-wise, is another good sort of research fact for Android. I don't know how seriously you want to take it or not, but there it is.
I just feel like these, you know, and I've probably said this in the past, but I feel like these number stories come up all the time. They're always kind of saying, you know, very similar things. Android's dominating iOS, you know, behind Android, or iOS in some of the studies is doing fantastic compared to Android. I think the big test, and the one that might actually change these studies that come through, will be if there is, you know, the next big breakout phone that is not on Android, like an iPhone 5. It'll be interesting to really kind of see how it changes, because I run out of things to say when it comes up to these number stories, and it's every single week. It's like, yes, okay,
well,
I get it, Android's still doing all right.
There was a story that Verizon customers last week, kind of, sort of the percentage that have jumped from Android to iPhone as well. I mean, okay, great. Well, that, you know, that's going to happen. So take it with a grain of salt.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Well, this is just a really quick hit, but actually, and it was kind of unfortunate how the timing worked out on this. Almost immediately after we wrapped last week's show, someone in the chat room gave the news that was spreading about Steve Kondik, who is also known as Cyanogen. And if you've rooted and, you know, thought about ROMing your phone, there's a good chance that the team at Cyanogen has created their version of, you know, Gingerbread or Froyo or whatever they do with Cyanogen Mod for your phone. He's the head of Cyanogen Mod, and he secured a position with Samsung, working, as he puts it, on making Android more awesome. So then, of course, this led for the entire week, you know, people wondering, okay, well, what does this mean for the possible fate of Cyanogen Mod? Because it's got a lot of fans. So they went ahead and put up a blog post on their site to just kind of reassure people and let you know, have no fear. They're still working hard on the revisions to the ROMs. They're a little bit slower right now because, you know what? Life happens, and everybody gets busy. And I can imagine, you know, kind of where he's at right now, starting with Samsung and kind of figuring out where he fits in there and how they're going to utilize him. But it's really good reassurance to know that the Cyanogen Mod project isn't going anywhere, because, I mean, that's right at the top of so many people's lists when it comes to rooting and ROMing, mm-hmm. ROMing your phone and putting something else on there. So
yeah. Oh, anyways. Yeah, no, it's just going to be interesting to see if he gets influenced by Samsung or if Cyanogen...
Or how he influences Samsung.
Yeah. You know?
And if there's a little bit of crossover there between what he's doing with Cyanogen Mod, what his team is doing with Cyanogen Mod, and kind of what Samsung is doing. I'll be really curious to kind of find out what that influence is going forward.
Yeah. Seemed like most people weren't worried. Go ahead, Nicole.
Yeah, I think it's good too. I mean, you know, who knows? Maybe it might bring a better design to Samsung products, right? Samsung Android phones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm
absolutely.
All for that.
Yeah,
Samsung girl that I am.
So the next thing is that Google's Andrew Rubin has announced that he split the Android bonus with his team. That resulted in paydays between $10,000 and $50,000 for Googlers across the team, the Wall Street Journal reported. So this sounds great for the Android team. They get a lot of bonus cash, right? Okay, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, good for them. You know, I guess... I guess it remains to be seen if what kind of influence this would actually have on on anybody actually getting these Android phones. More than anything, this is just kind of nice to know. You know, it kind of gives you a warm feeling inside that he's sharing this with his Android team, particularly.
Absolutely, he gets a big fat bonus, and he doesn't run away with it. He gives it to he shares it with the team. Love a
That's not all. He even threw two parties. Like he throws two parties a year.
Okay, Leo. Well, we got one, right?
Yeah, right. We got one. So. And after he sees the reverberations of how hungover everybody is and what that does to the shows the day after, I don't know if we're getting another party.
He was going to be like, no more parties.
No more parties.
He tried to keep the bar here, too, but that wasn't going to happen. So, anyways, well, good. Well, congratulations to the Android team, I guess. Nice. Cha-ching.
Cha-ching.
All right. Well, we've kept him waiting long enough. I'd like to go ahead and bring in our interview with Ted Ladd of WIM Labs, Director of Developer Relations. How you doing there, Ted? Thanks for hanging in there.
Oh, delighted. I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Now, can you give us a little bit of information on WIM Labs and what we're showing off your website right now. Looks like watches. What else is coming out in store from WIM?
Well, so flip back to the video of me for a second. I'll show you.
Okay.
How can you see that? There it is.
So you're showing us?
I'm showing it's a module that can go inside of anything. So, yes, we have it inside of a watch band. There we have it inside of a white watch band. But the fact that it's in a watch band is almost irrelevant. This can go in a pendant. It can go in a hospital gurney. It can go in an inventory tracking system. It can go in a natural gas detector. I had an engineering firm call me about that today. So what we're really trying to do is push this into ubiquitous computing. And wearable technology and expand it beyond what people typically think of as wearable technology and when they stop at the concept of a watch.
Now, where did the idea come from? The first thing I ever heard of, you know, sort of expanding Android was at Google I.O. and expanding in the home. And, you know, we saw it in treadmills, Google I.O., you know, lots of different places. I mean, have you guys been working on this for a long time now, or is this sort of a recent development?
No, this is 2 years in the coming.
Okay, that's what I figured.
We've done a couple of different things with Android that are important for wearable technology. The first is, and I'll hold it up here, I have not touched the screen. This is what it looks like until you touch the screen, and this may sound or look unastounding. So let me touch the screen so you see what happens. Then it lights up.
Ooh.
What we've done is actually put in here a microcontroller that is very, very low power and a reflective screen so that for most of the day, you're only looking, you can see the time perfectly all day. You can't do this with a smartphone. You can't do this with a laptop. You can't do this with any of the other, or most of the other watches out there, whether they're smart or not. Once you touch the button, all of a sudden we're spinning up an ARM 11 processor, applications processor, which can burst up to 667 megahertz and a full active touchscreen. So we have a full-size computer here with this dual processor architecture.
A lot of people are
asking. To allow us to run all day.
A lot of people in the chat room are asking, well, a few people are asking about connectivity.
We have Wi-Fi and Bluetooth built into here, as well as accelerometers and magnetometers.
Hmm.
This is a fully loaded, fully connected computer.
It does not have,
in anticipation of any of the chat room comments, it does not have a persistent 3G radio. We look forward to building that in eventually, but right now we don't have it because the battery life on something like that would be way, way too short.
Yeah.
Actually, that kind of leads me to one of my questions is what kind of battery life are you getting out of this kind of device right now? And I mean, is it the type of thing, like, I guess I've never thought of plugging in my watch at the end of the day to charge it up for the next day, but I would imagine something like this, you would need to do that, right?
You would need to do that.
That's exactly what you'd need to do. We're on, in the average use case, you plug it in every night, only for a couple hours, but you need to top up the battery. There are, we can extend that out if you do things like reduce the amount of time you're willing to get internet connectivity or reduce Bluetooth. But we think that the use case, the most robust experience people expect is when they top it up every night. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we're doing with Bluetooth that we think is important is we're actually communicating with your smartphone. So I can get caller ID on my wrist and I can dismiss it to voicemail. If I'm running an Android smartphone, I can then keep the phone in my pocket and receive text messages on my wearable device, whether it's on my wrist or anywhere else. So we're communicating with the smartphone so that you can actually get better battery life out of your smartphone by not having to turn it on every couple of minutes in order to see what time it is or whether you've received a text message.
Interesting. Cubed in the chat room actually is asking if it's a modular design. Like, could you design something like a GPS module that you could actually plug into it? Or do you have any ideas of making it kind of a module design going into the future?
There are a couple different ways to take that question. In terms of modularity, that's exactly what it's designed for. It's designed to be a self-contained module where people can download a hardware development kit and therefore create their own accessories or peripherals in order to interact with the devices they choose. We put pins on the back so that you can connect with it. The reason we did pins instead of a standard connection like micro USB is because this is water resistant. We don't want you to put this in a watch, wash the dishes, and have it break. So
yeah.
we've sealed it in the same way that we're running actually a micro SD chip in here. Right now we have 2 gigs in this device, which is called the WIM1 Developer Preview, which will be shipping in several weeks. That has 2 gigs in it, but we can go up to 32 gigs. And the other way to take modularity, I think you had asked about some of the other things we have in it. We can, because we have Bluetooth in here, we can connect with other Bluetooth devices. So this can read sensors, things like that. We have GPS on the platform. It's not going to be included in the WIM1 developer preview,
sure,
but we have tested it on other design boards.
That's cool. We did ask some people on Google Plus. I seem to like to do that these days. And one of the questions that came in was from Cohen Hendricks, who actually sounds like maybe, he brings up the question of kind of individual users wanting to develop for this platform. He says, can I develop my own Android apps and load them onto the WIM, or do I need like a special, well, I know the answer to this part of it, the special developer's kit and cables to do that. But is this the type of platform that individual users are going to be able to kind of program their own apps to appear in that little screen, or is it kind of locked down to what you've already programmed for it?
No. That's just the beauty of Android is based on developers like Cohen, where we have an SDK that will be coming out at the same time that we ship the WIM1 that will allow people to develop their own apps. Yeah. The SDK adds some APIs to the Android platform that are important for the way that we do synchronization, for example.
Sure.
So yes, this is absolutely a platform ripe for development, not just for people to create their own apps for use themselves, but also for people to start to create apps that push into industries that haven't yet seen the explosion of Android devices, like healthcare. Like fitness, it's doing pretty well right now on the Android smartphones, the fitness category. But once you can actually connect a device to your wrist, we think that fitness all of a sudden becomes a category that has much more potential to it because you can now have subtle glances at information.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'm sure you guys have thought about it, but it does, put it next side by side with the Fitbits, with the Nike sports watch, with, I think Jawbone has its own solution for this kind of thing. And it's very, since it's so customizable, you can add your own, you don't have to use Nike. You can use your own fitness app on it if you want.
Sure.
Well, you can use it for fitness when you're exercising, and then you can go back to the applications that you want to use during the day just to keep it on. So you don't have to have all of these multiple single function devices. You can now have a device that does fitness. And then when I touch on it right here and I can pull up my calendar, I can't do it upside down. I can pull up my calendar here. And this is pulling from my Gmail account, or I can pull from Exchange. I can see the weather. We have a whole bunch of applications that are already loaded on that lend themselves to making your day more productive. Mm-hmm. And then we're an open platform.
That's cool. Have to ask, because people are going to want to know this, obviously, is when some of the first devices that are kind of utilizing your platform are going to be releasing, and B, kind of what the cost is going to be for these devices. I know on the few posts that I read, it was a range between $200 and $2,000, which it's quite a range.
It's a big range.
Yeah, it's a big range. But like, for something like a cool watch that integrates this technology, what would you put the price point at for something like that?
Okay. Let me answer those questions in order. The first is, when will you see a WIM1 developer device? We're looking at several weeks now. Mm-hmm. So this will be coming out soon. Our major partner, which is Foxconn, the largest manufacturer of consumer electronics in the world, is helping us design the manufacturing lines and start up the manufacturing lines right now. So several weeks for the first question. What it will cost? The developer preview unit will retail for $299, but because we want developers to get their hands on them, we're giving a $100 discount for the first one that anybody buys. If you want to buy more, have at it. But it's $199 then for the developer preview unit, so you can get going. The third question that is in there about the $200 to $2,000. You can imagine if somebody were to take this device and put it into a ceramic unit with a ceramic strap and with leather band if they wanted to, and then maybe even jewels around the outside or some sort of interesting strap, that the price for that could go up pretty radically. Mm-hmm. We're, as a platform company, only producing the WIM1 developer preview. That's perhaps the only device you'll ever see with the WIM name on it. And then it's up to our licensees to come out to the market with different designs and software and aimed at different market segments.
Sure. Yeah, that's definitely worth noting is that these prices are not necessarily for Joe Blow consumer, you know, going to buy this unit. This is priced for developers to be able to get their hands on it and really create what they're going to create and eventually hopefully market out to the public. And then, you know, I guess that price will be revealed, whatever that ends up being. But that's very interesting. I really like thinking about Android and just technology in general, but Android in a different way. I feel like we see so many Android devices every single week. We talk about all these new devices that are coming along, but they all kind of follow the same format. This is doing something different. That's great. I wish you the best of luck with this.
And thank you very much.
Where could people go, Ted? Just for those who are listening who haven't been watching the video.
For more information on the WIM platform, please see us at WIMM.com. That's WIMM.com. Or follow us on Twitter at WIMDEV, WIMMDEV, for developer focused information, and WIM Labs, WIMMLABS, for consumer focused information. We're also right now accepting some requests for early views at the SDK and the HDK. So if you have something that you are dying to create, and you think you can produce it in time for our launch several weeks from now, and you think it would appeal to a large audience, please send me a note via the website. I'd love to hear from you.
That's awesome. We have a lot of developers that definitely follow the show. So why not develop for another platform, something that's a little more unique than just the general Android? So Ted Ladd, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Jason, Eileen, Nicole, thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. All right, take care.
Have a good evening.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
All right, well, we'll take a quick break now and thank our sponsor, Netflix, which the show is brought to you by Netflix, streaming thousands of TV episodes and movies directly to you instantly, saving you time, headache, hassle. You just plug in your device that has a Netflix app installed in an Xbox 360, PS3, Nintendo Wii. There's an Android app, iPhone. I mean, the thing's all over the place. It's pretty easy to stream the instant streaming from Netflix if you have a device like that. And if you're not a gamer, you can find it on PlayStation. Places like the Roku, the Apple TV, tons of places. So they just have a huge selection, a huge library. I never watch the actual DVDs because I always find something to watch on the instant streaming myself. One of the cool things that you can actually do, and this comes in really handy with the Android app, is that you can kind of start a movie in one place and continue on it. On another place. So if you started at home and you run out of time, you have to hop on the train to go to work or whatever, you know, watch it on the train. Sure, that works. You use your app. That's what it's there for. And you can cancel anytime if you so choose. But you can go ahead and try the Netflix streaming for 30 days for free. You can visit netflix.com/twit and be sure to use that URL when you sign up to get the free trial. Again, that's netflix.com/twit. And are you pulling up the app?
Yeah, I've got the app right now. I'm resuming my viewing of Angel. So you guys can keep going with the show. I'm going to finish now.
All right. Nicole and I got it.
No, but here it is on the phone. I'm streaming. It's kind of dark. But if you go back to the app, you could see here, resume. So I can just resume wherever I stopped off from last time. So
nice.
Yeah, I was watching. Actually, I kind of cheated. I jumped in the middle of Angel. I got to go back to the beginning.
Don't forget to go back to the beginning.
Yeah, these are some of the shows that I'm watching. Yeah, this ABC Family show, Switch at Birth. And I'm trying to watch Party Down right now, but I just don't think it's that funny. I don't get it.
Yeah, I keep meaning to check that one out. I haven't seen it yet.
Watched four episodes, and I'm not really down with it. But I'm loving my Angel and Buffy instant streaming on Netflix. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, and my husband, we're watching the entire series of IT Crowd right now.
Oh,
I haven't seen that yet either.
It's all on there.
Oh, right on. Nice. Well, I will have to remember that because I always hear Tom, of all people. Tom is always talking about the IT Crowd. I'm like, I got to make a mental note and actually see that so I understand his jokes. Anyways,
I don't know if anybody can.
Anyways, netflix.com/twit is the URL to go for 30 days free. Check it out. We thank Netflix for their support of All About Android and the Twit Network. We know you'll love it, so check it out. All right, let's move on to our next segment. We are going to dive deep this week into hardware. All right. So first off, if you were following things online, well, okay, let's go back a little bit. Let's go back to, you know, the end of last week where HP pretty much just kind of said, yeah, broom, broom. They said that they were getting out of the computer business for the most part. And then over the weekend, if you weren't kind of following the feeds online, you'll notice that the HP touchpad became a really hot ticket item. HP slashed the price to $100 all over the net, as well as certain brick and mortar stores, and Android geeks particularly, and I saw a lot of this over the weekend, they were buying the device, and it ended up topping Amazon's US sales chart. I mean, it sold ridiculously and sold out all throughout the weekend. And all these Android fans are, of course, buying this in the hopes that, you know, it's a webOS tablet right out of the box. But everyone really feels confident about the fact that there will be a gingerbread Android port happening, that it will be attained on the device. So that would make this a $100 tablet and a ridiculous deal for the hardware that it packs. It's got a 9.7-inch LED multi-touch display, dual-core 1.2 gigahertz Qualcomm Snapdragon S3 processor, 16 or 32 gigabyte storage, front-facing camera, Beats audio. I mean, for the dollar amount, for 100 measly dollars to get all of that hardware packed in there, and then to find out that the TouchDroid team is working to pour gingerbread onto it and expect to pour an ice cream sandwich on it eventually, I mean, that just makes this a ridiculous bargain.
Yeah. I mean, I thought yeah, the color was cheap.
I know. Well, this kind of blows it out of the water.
This is even more powerful, right?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's $99. It makes it the cheapest tablet. And it just makes me wonder, like, oh, HP, why did you price it so high to begin with? But, you know, that's kind of the power, the great thing about Android, right? It's open source. And you can just put it on here if you can figure out how to do it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And they're going to be able to figure it out. There are rumblings and rumors that there's, you know, there may be somebody that's already got it on there, but it's so soon to tell. And I don't doubt by any stretch of the imagination that there are enough people who are very smart about this working on it, just because of the sheer fact that so many people bought it for that purpose in mind. I don't think technically there's any reason that it couldn't be done on this, right. So we'll definitely see it. I did skip Honeycomb only because in as far as what TouchDroid is hoping to port onto it, only because Honeycomb really isn't necessarily open source by Google yet. I mean, there is absolutely the possibility that they're going to find Honeycomb from another device and be able to port it onto there. So I guess it could happen too. But ultimately, initially, they're trying to get gingerbread on there. I'm pretty sure that they will. So if you got a $100 touchpad, you probably got yourself a heck of a deal, probably the deal of the year.
Great deal. Yeah.
So did you guys want to get one this weekend when all of the news broke out? I mean, I have to say, I was thinking, I don't need another tablet, but now it's like, I'm kind of like,
I was very tempted. I mean, I wasn't tempted before, but the price point is like amazing, you know? Like, it's cheaper than a Kindle.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, it's kind of crazy.
$100 is not nothing necessarily, because I don't want to make it sound like, oh yeah, $100, big whoop. But it's so cheap
than a Kindle, and you can do way more than a Kindle, right?
That's true.
Absolutely.
So the hardware's not bad.
No. So now, are we going to be on the wait list now that we've...
Probably not. Like same as you. Like, yeah. I have a tablet.
Yeah.
It would be cool to get one, maybe, you know, to kind of show, once the process is done, kind of show how that's done, so that anybody that follows the show, maybe, could, you know, if they needed a walkthrough on how to do it, we could do that. But Tony, our TD for the show, is apparently on a wait list.
Yeah, so
maybe
we're banking on him to be the one to get it, and then we can show it off here.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully he'll get one, and then maybe we can, at least at the very least, if he does something with it, show it off and kind of show what it's like to have gingerbread running on it. So.
Right.
But anyways, awesome. So that's that. But more hardware, and that's
from more hardware. So I don't know if you guys heard, but the next Nexus phone may be the Samsung Nexus Prime? Question mark. And it may have ice cream sandwich, obviously, because it is the next Nexus phone. They usually have the latest OS on there, usually. And apparently, it's coming in October, according to Engadget. And it looks like we could see it in time for Halloween, according to a report in Korea's Electronic Times. They may be fingering an October launch for it, and it looks like it might have a 4.5-inch HD AMOLED display, a 1.5K gigahertz dual core processor. So very fast, very bright, big display too. 4.5 inches is pretty, it's pretty big, I think.
Yeah. Are there other 4.5 inch phones out there right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, there are. I can't remember them off the top of my head, but there are those phones that are like, is that's it a phone be, or is it a tablet?
Yeah, you know? That's got to be pushing the upper end of the phone category.
I know, totally.
But I'm eager to see what that's like, because I honestly, you know, I have the Thunderbolt with the 4.3, I believe it is, on the Thunderbolt, mm-hmm. and I feel like I could go for a bigger phone possibly.
Really? Yeah. Wow. Mine's 4.3 too, but this is it. I don't want to. I really don't think I can go bigger than what I have here. Yeah. This is perfect. But, you know,
I'd be willing to check it out.
Wow.
At least just to see what it's like.
You know, I thought it was funny in prep, Nicole, you said that you were trying to, at our Twit party, you were trying to get some information out of a Googler that was here. And she was like, no. We'll say who it was. It was Colleen. And she's like, what are you trying to get me in trouble here? You were trying to get some information. You came up with nothing, right? She was like,
no,
lips are sealed.
I got nothing.
Oh, well.
But, you know.
Can't say we didn't try.
I was trying.
Yeah, that's awesome.
She was drunk. You know, she was drinking all the martinis. I was like, yeah, get what she's
here,
drunk.
Yeah, drink another one.
So about that Nexus Prime, right? It's coming out in October. Wait, is it great? Yeah. I'm just like, oh.
It's also worth mentioning that some people are reporting that the Prime has been spotted in Verizon headquarters, kind of doing the rounds there. Some people have spotted it. Who knows if that's real or not? But it's certainly leading many to wonder if Verizon will be the ones to release it. That would be pretty sweet.
Yeah. So now you will have.
I know.
How many phones?
It's crazy.
The Bionic, possibly the Prime, and then the Vigor.
The Vigor.
That's three phones that you might possibly choose from.
Life is good.
Droid as well. So, there may be another Droid as well.
Another one?
Yeah, the Droid HD, right?
Okay, yeah. So given those possibilities, is there any, do you have any concept of maybe which one you're like leaning towards?
I mean, if it just right off the top from what I know right now, mm-hmm. if it was between the Bionic, the Vigor, and the Prime, I think I'd have to just by default go with the Prime.
Because of the Google,
you know,
experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Like, I wouldn't necessarily say personally. I wouldn't say that Samsung is my favorite hardware manufacturer. Mm-hmm. Like the quality of the hardware, they tend to go for a little bit more of that plasticky feel than a lot of like the HTC phones. Definitely Motorola has kind of that harder edge, you know. But there's something about their aesthetic that doesn't appeal to me all the time. So I would say by design, I really like HTC phones, and I would love to get an HTC phone as my next phone. But it would be really hard to turn my nose up to the Nexus Prime, given that it is, you know, the next Nexus phone, the first one on Verizon, and possibly the first one with Ice Cream Sandwich. That would be hard to avoid.
Okay.
Well, there you go.
I'm probably going to lose my bet.
We'll see. You go either way.
Yeah.
What do you got?
Okay, well, next week I'm going to give, speaking of hardware and speaking of HTC, I just want to show off the HTC Sensation that I have here, Tony. Can you see this over a shoulder shot? I just have this here. It's been out for, I think, since May, and I'm going to do a little review next week. I have it in my hot little hands here. Those of you on G Plus who have responded, many of you love this phone already, and you know, I'm starting to see why. I've got 4G on here, and you know, I'm really interested to kind of dig in and to kind of see, you know, what people are really loving about the phone. So I will have a full review next week.
Will this be your first like extended hands-on with Sense? Or have you had much experience?
Yeah, because the Nexus One was a pure Google phone. So
I'll be curious to see what you think about the Sense experience.
And
is it Sense 3? I think it's Sense 3.
Yeah, it's the latest Sense on there. Yeah.
That's good. I really like Sense 3.
I think you're going to like it.
Yeah.
Really?
Sense 3 is a good
I already like the camera quite a bit, and I've been kind of just, look how fast everything's kind of switching. Oh my God, look at that. My goodness.
Yeah.
I'm just spinning.
It's very fast.
Some people don't like that carousel, but I don't know. It's okay to me. So anyways, I will have a full review next week, and
cool.
I'm really excited. I already like the feel of it.
Yeah.
Check out the back here. We've got the metal and some
a little kind of grippy.
Yeah, a little grippy it's nice. This is also 4.3, which is comparable to mine. Now, it's not AMOLED like this, But still, and I don't have the brightness, not fair. I don't have the brightness pumped up on the HTC here. But, you know, it feels really good in your hand.
Have you played around with the Sensation at all, Nicole?
Yeah, I played around with it. You know, T-Mobile has just sort of, I guess their two big Android phones is the G2X and then this phone, the Sensation 4G. And it's really whether you want a pure Android versus you want HTC. I mean, it really comes down to that, more or less. And, you know, the HTC Sense is pretty good. I mean, you know, if you don't mind not having a pure Android experience, like, you know, HTC is pretty good.
It's an interesting, actually, kind of side note discussion that I've been thinking about a lot lately is that we all, you know, a lot of the people that end up rooting and ROMing and stuff are always looking for kind of the pure vanilla experience, and that's why they do it. But then you end up getting it, and then you end up customizing it to all get out anyways. You put your own contacts app on there. You put your own lock screen mod on there or whatever. It's kind of like Sense, in Sense in particular, because I personally really like their approach. Sense does a lot of those elements in an appealing to me sort of way, to where if I'm running Sense, I don't necessarily feel like I have to like put a new lock screen thing on there. That might not
appeal
to anybody.
It's the same thing with Samsung too, right, Eileen? Like Samsung's UI isn't that obtrusive.
Not to me.
I don't think.
The latest
and I haven't had much time with Samsung. So,
I'm just playing around here with screens. This is kind of cool.
Yeah. It's like a theme picker.
Yeah, theme picker. It's kind of fun.
Cool. Well, I'll be curious to hear what you think about that.
Yeah, I'm going to spend all week with it. I'm going to kind of gently put my phone away. I love this phone, you guys. And I'm not switching phones, but I'm gonna kind of give this a whirl.
Cool. I don't know if you mentioned this earlier, but I guess Samsung has quote unquote something big coming up in the IFA trade show in Berlin.
Oh yeah, we totally didn't mention that. So yes, good to mention. Absolutely, that September 1st, they are revealing something big, and they have these video. These video ads, the second one's probably the better of the two, Tony.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's so, you know, unrevealing. All it really shows is people walking around with glowing things in their hands.
It's got to be the Prime, don't you think?
I don't know. Like my initial thought was, okay, you know, they would make a big deal about having, you know, another Prime, and especially a Prime coming out on Verizon would be kind of a big deal, certainly waited for. But then there's also a lot of rumors that it could be a 7-inch tablet.
Looks like a phone.
Well, yes, it does. Some of them look like a phone. There's a few shots where they're putting it up to their ears. So you know that there's a phone involved somewhere. So maybe it's a dual announcement. Maybe they're releasing the 7.1 refresh of the tablet, and then they're doing a phone of some sort. What do you think, Nicole? Do you have any speculation on this?
Well, it's going to be – I mean, when is this video – when is this trade show?
September 1st.
September 1st.
Yeah, this announcement is September 1st.
I think it's – I don't know. If they're going to release the Prime in October, it just seems odd to – reveal it a month earlier.
Do you think that the typical way to do that would be to reveal it?
They usually time it at the same time, don't they?
Okay. Like, we're revealing it today, and it's available today.
That doesn't look like a tablet, though. I mean, these things are glowing.
Yeah.
It seems so small. So, this is
maybe it's
still
a mini galaxy. Tiny galaxy.
Galaxy Nano. Yeah. That would fly.
Well, the 29th is supposed
with Samsung of all companies. Call it the Galaxy Nano. Yeah, right.
Well, they're going to have a big announcement on the 29th in New York. We talked about that last week. And now this year on the 1st.
Oh, that's true.
They're going big.
Yeah. I'm very curious to see what they come up with.
The reason why I say it may not be a phone, because they did say something big. It could be like a tablet. That's why I'm going from that.
Yeah, but why
is that ad? Why does that ad look like
so phone centric?
Like,
yeah,
I'm holding my hand to my ear right now. For those of you who can't see,
a 5-inch phone, big phone.
We've made our 10.1-inch tablet a phone. Yeah.
Yeah. Can we?
That would get some headlines.
Can you imagine? Okay, those of you who are watching. Hey guys, I've got a tablet to my ear right now.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous.
Kind of, I don't know. Okay, one last piece. I just want to thank Will Deasy, who came by to the Twit Brick House to watch Twit yesterday, and he showed me his Acer Iconia A500. And Tony, there we go. It was slightly heavy, but the experience that I had, it's kind of like a Zoom in a way to me. Now, it was really fast, and it was really, it seemed to be snappier than I thought. He bought it for like $300. It's $400, got the $100 coupon off. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, I think I saw a lot about of that deal kind of going around.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? It wasn't a bad a tablet. I think one thing that he didn't like was the actual charging cable was really super small. So,
yeah.
Like, why do they do that? I don't understand why you would give
the charging cable
like 4 inches. It's not, yeah, and there you go. They've got a specialized pin, so it's not micro USB. You know what? It looked
the docking station is pretty snazzy.
Yeah, he didn't get the docking station either. But I played with it a little bit, opened up a couple apps. Everything was snappy. Everything moved really well. The camera looked pretty cool. They have a couple of system. He's got 3.1 on it running and just updated. He said it was a lot better with 3.1 versus having 3.0. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I'd like to just thank him for stopping by and showing off that new tablet, which I thought was actually pretty decent.
Yeah.
For
looks
a honeycomb
nice.
Tablet, yeah.
Sure.
And 10.1, so, much like your
right.
Samsung over there. But
right.
Anyways, cool. Thank you again, Will.
All right, we have an email from Matt in Fort Collins. Why don't you take it away?
Yeah, this is kind of a lengthy email, and basically he got his first Android phone, which is the G2X, and he says, now I want to move from 2.2 to at least 2.3, and I don't think Timo is going to push an official update anytime soon, which they say they have. So I want to install an aftermarket ROM. I've already rooted using Super OneClick, and I'm backing up with Titanium Backup, but now I've read some things that are making me angsty about taking the next step, namely this mention on the CM7 Nightly page about how Tegra 2 devices need to have ROM Manager Clockwork Mod installed differently, or it could be unrecoverable if something goes wrong. And here's what he read. It is strongly recommended that you flash Clockwork Recovery via NVFlash if for some reason this or a future Nightly build causes your phone to not boot up. You will not be able to boot into recovery unless you have it flashed via NVFlash. To clear up some confusion, if you flash your recovery via ROM Manager, you didn't actually flash a recovery. It is what we call a fake flash. You should still probably flash with NVFlash. I lost that here. Not that I plan on using the Nightly builds, but I don't want my phone to get bricked if I mess something up. Anyways, just wondering if you have any insight on that matter and if you heard of any ROMs to try or to avoid on this phone. Well, I decided to go to someone in-house who actually has the G2X, and that's Leo. So, for you and for anybody, I asked him, caught a little piece of video of him talking about this issue, and then it turned into a really cool help and how to segment. So I wondered, so I went ahead and just said, hey, Leo,
let's roll it
into the show.
Yeah, here we go.
Hey, Matt, it's Leo here, and I have exactly the same phone you do, the T-Mobile G2X or LG 9999. It's their the LG Optimus for the U.S. market. And I, like you, was getting a little unhappy with Froyo. Now, before you do anything, the good news is that supposedly they are starting to push out Gingerbread as an over-the-air update for the G2X. I haven't seen it. But I long ago got fed up, and I did what you did. I rooted my phone. That wasn't so hard. Super OneClick works fine in the G2X. And then the next step to putting your own ROM on it, and I do recommend CyanogenMod. In fact, I use CM7 daily or nightly builds. And I've been very happy. I'll tell you the one negative on that. But the next step is to get Clockwork Mod on there so that you can get into recovery mode easily. In fact, the issue I think that you were reading about really is only that if you do the easy way Clockwork Mod using ROM Manager, you'll lose your stock ROM. And so you can't go back to the stock ROM. But there are people out there with rooted stock ROMs floating around. I found that wasn't too hard to find. I've gotten a situation where I get in a reboot loop or whatever, and there's always a way to get back to putting Clockwork Mod on there so that you get into recovery mode. This is the key to getting your own ROMs on there, is getting into recovery mode. So I use these instructions. As always, XDA Developers is the best. Here's the same thing back here if you want. But XDA Developer has... This is the instructions I use. Essentially, you're going to download a Linux script that you can run on the Mac, or if you have an ADB driver you can run on Windows, that will copy the Clockwork Mod files on there. That's step one. Once you've got Clockwork Mod on there, you can use ROM Manager. In fact, ROM Manager will put Clockwork Mod on there, and this is actually the easiest way to do it. So now that you've got it rooted, just download ROM Manager. It's free for $5.99. You can get the full version that lets you do the nightlies. And what's nice is now I've got ROM Manager running on here and Clockwork Mod, and I'll show you on the screen. There's a few things I can do that are really great. If I launch my ROM Manager, and I have it right on the front screen here, you have to have it rooted. There's a few things you can do. You can update Clockwork Mod. You can reboot into recovery. One of the things you might want to do right away is to back up your current ROM. So once you get Clockwork or ROM Manager on there, first thing you should probably do is back up your current ROM. It puts it in a zip file, which you can then copy to something else and have. And that always gives you a chance to go back to your original ROM. And then once you've done that, now it's a chance for you to browse the existing ROMs. If you do the paid version, you'll have a choice of Cyanogen Nightlies, but even the free version gives you all these ROM choices. I'm a Cyanogen fan. I mean, I've tried all of these just for fun to see what else they have. But really, the easiest thing to do is to get either the CM7 Release Candidate 1, which is the most recent version of CM7 Release Candidate. I went with Nightly because I like getting new updates every day. And so the Nightly build, you just press the download button. Make sure you get Google Apps. It'll download the new Nightly build. Once it does so, then it'll give you an option to clear the Dalvik cache, which I would do. If you want a fresh start, clear the data and cache as well. That's like a factory restore. I don't usually do that with the Nightlies. I merely you can see it's downloading in the background right here. I merely just wipe the Dalvik cache, and then that way all my apps stay in place, everything stays in place. You're smart to use Titanium because then you have a backup. Now, I said I'd say there's some caveats to doing this. The only big one is the one thing that doesn't work, and still it may be a while before it works, is Stereo Bluetooth, A2DP. Apparently, NVIDIA has not released the source code for the Tegra 2 chip for A2DP, so they haven't been able to put it into the Cyanogen build. Everything else works. In fact, works better. I don't get the reboots that I used to get from the G2X. The GPS works faster. The battery life seems to be a lot better. It's a big improvement. I would recommend going with Cyanogen Nightlies. The Nightlies have been very reliable ever since Release Candidate 1. And if you can live without A2DP, this is a great fix. Now you've got Gingerbread on here. You've got better battery life and a more reliable phone. Highly recommended. It all comes down to
That was me. It all comes down to ROM. I think I covered the mic at the end. I was
comes
shooting
down to
that.
ROM Manager at the end.
Yeah, I was shooting that with a Sony Bloggy, so that's why the audio wasn't so clear. I kind of just, you know, caught him in a moment where, like, ooh, I got some time with him.
Yeah.
Hey, do you mind answering this question really quick? So that's what happened. That was really quick. I didn't have one of our really cool cameras with me.
But, ROM Manager is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I've used it all the time. I mean, it really gives you all the tools you need if you're flashing ROMs. It's a little different than the Boot Manager app that I covered last week that allows you to kind of multi-boot different or store different versions and different OSs onto different slots on your card. This is a little more geared towards just flashing, you know, flashing to your phone specifically, but also doing the kind of maintenance-y things that go along with that, like backing up your phone. And it just kind of really makes it very easy to find new things and reinstall them. Leo's totally right. I use it all the time.
Cool.
It's a fantastic app.
Thank you, Leo.
Yeah, thank you, Leo. That's great. All right, let's waste no time. Jump right into apps. All right. So real quick, I've definitely talked on the show about the Google Reader Android app. We had a whole kind of feed reader app arena well early in the show. And they actually just released a new version of the Google Reader app. It minorly changes the phone version, but it adds Honeycomb support, actually. Let me get my reader up. I have my tablet here, Google Reader, where is it? Normally I store these. There we go. So it does the cool thing with the, you know, that all kind of optimized for Honeycomb tablets do. Ooh, I gotta do that then. Where it has kind of your left-hand column where you can kind of navigate through, and then your right-hand column where it pulls up the articles and different things if you want to blow them up. it's a definite improvement, and it's way nicer than it was. It was really funky the way it was before it was optimized for Honeycomb. Having said that, I've gotten so used to using Pulse on my tablet for feed reading, and just kind of the graphical nature of Pulse is so incredibly inviting that going back to Google Reader on the tablet is, again, it's functional. It's totally functional and it's fine. It's just not the kind of app that I want to just pull right out and, you know, use. Whereas it's like, if I'm pulling this app, I'm pulling it out because I want to find something particular. But with Pulse, I'm just pulling it out because I've got time to kill and I want to just kind of read through things and see what I find. So, but it's definitely a good improvement. If you like the way that Google Reader works on the web, it follows kind of that that look and feel a lot more. So you might actually really really dig the update. I'm going to try and force myself to use it a little bit more and use Pulse a little bit less, just so that I get a little bit more familiar with it. But yeah, it's a good update. I just don't know if it's going to push Pulse out of my daily usage.
I know. I like Pulse quite a bit too.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I have an app to share. In the news last week, Evernote just bought Sketch, which is a which has been an app for annotation and editing and screenshots. And not only did they buy it, but they went ahead and gave the Android people, us, a free app to go along with it. If you're familiar with the app Pixay, it's very similar, although that one, there's the free and then there's also the paid version. This one is completely free. So, you know, what you could do here, you could just kind of draw, have markers, you know, kind of mess up your images. Let's see, I'm going to pick a image here, kind of load it. This is the cake from our party, which is all messed up. Does it rotate? Oh, it does rotate. Good. So
there's still that cake from the party back there.
I know, it is still back there. So what am I going to do? I'm going to circle that. Oh, look at the cake. Or I could do text, you know, yummy.
So it's kind of like you're not necessarily run of the mill, because I haven't used it, but there are a lot of apps on Android that allow you to kind of take a photo and spruce it up with colorful graphics and add text and
the difference
funny hats
here is that once you save it, you could go ahead and, if you're a big Evernote user, you can upload it to Evernote and you can annotate it. You could, you know, do all the things that you might normally do.
Yeah.
Heavy Evernote users, which there's millions of
People
will love this
Evernote
app, I think. And how easy was that for me to just draw right then and there?
Right. And from the looks of it, it looks very similar to the Mac app.
Yes.
Sketch has been out. Sketch has its own like a Mac screenshot app for a while now. Mm-hmm. And the look and feel of the Android app is very, very similar to the desktop version. Like the whole text is the same. The arrows are the same. So if you're very familiar with Sketch on the desktop, you'll be familiar with this as well.
I like it. I like it quite a bit. That was, you know, there's my pretty cake picture.
I can't even see the cake anymore. All I see
I
is
know,
yum.
Yum. Maybe I'll G plus it myself. I don't know.
Yeah.
So anyways, cool. That's free and in the Android marketplace.
Sketch.
Right. Yeah, Sketch. Android. Sketch.
Cool.
Very cool. And next up, very exciting for fans of Google TV, Android devs can now start optimizing their apps for Google TV. With the upcoming OS update to Honeycomb, Google TV devices will be Android compatible. That means developers can build great new Android apps for TV, optimize existing mobile or tablet apps for TV, and distribute those apps through Android Market. While the add-on does not contain all features of Google TV, it enables developers to emulate Google TV and build apps using standard Android SDK tools. So those of you who have the Google TV devices might finally be able to play your Android apps on your big screen television, something like that.
You have one, right, Ali?
I do. I don't know what... it's going to be interesting to see what apps actually make it to Google TV. And it's also worthy to note that the touchscreen apps, if it's definitely required to have touchscreen, those will not appear in Google TV. So I'm guessing some of the games. I'm trying to think what app I would want. Yeah. I'm just trying to think what app I would want to have on my Google TV.
Yeah.
Maybe Reader?
Yeah, I know.
I don't know.
I'm very curious to see I'm very curious to see what app developers do to kind of appeal to users of the Google TV, and especially to see what is the cream of the crop, what really rises to the top and becomes really useful on a Google TV. Because like you, it's really hard for me to think about an interactive app that I want to sit on my couch and... I don't know. It just seems it doesn't seem like it really speaks to me, but I'm sure there will be something really cool that comes out of it, you know?
And what would be really cool for me anyway is if they can figure out how to do it. Like, if you could play a multiplayer game and everyone has their Android phones out, mm-hmm. and you could play the game, like, on the big screen television, but each person has their own controller in their phone.
Mm-hmm. That would be cool.
That would be kind of cool, right?
That's kind of the way I see it. It's got to be some sort of entertainment app, right? Yeah. So games... Yeah. You know, you already have Netflix on there, on Google TV. Am I really going to want to be productive on my TV?
Yeah, exactly. No. Are you really going to want to, like, be tweeting from your couch?
Yeah. Do I want Wunderlist on there? Yeah, well, they do. You can using the browser right now, but I never do.
Well, yeah, you know? Totally. And you'll be able to from an app at some point.
Yeah, I guess some, like, music apps, although a lot of that stuff is already on there, too. So, yeah. I don't know. It'll be really interesting. But I like that idea, Nicole. I like, hey, I'm going to have, this is my controller. Let's play, you know, multiplayer, whatever. Yeah. You know,
you could make it like a Scrabble, like a board game where the Scrabble board is on the TV, but each person has their own individual tile rack. Like, kind of like how Words with Friends work a little bit, like the whole Scrabble tile rack thing. Mm-hmm. That'd be kind of neat, you know.
All right, you're on, Nicole. I'll play against you.
All right.
Right on. All right. Well, I think we should waste no more time and jump right into the arena.
Two enter, one lives. Android Arena.
That should be the title. More face.
More face.
More face, Jace. all right, so first of all, last week's poll. I don't know if I necessarily expected this, but we covered the contacts replacement apps, and it appears that Contaps, my app... ended up
Jason
winning.
Won. And, you know,
I thought Go Contacts had a lot of steam.
Well, I'm just glad Ron's not here because, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Again. He got Colorado and he got Virginia and Tennessee. We're looking at our poll map right now. You claimed so many states.
I always get Idaho. That's important
to
me.
I know. I can't believe California turned against me. But I did, you know, Oregon, even though I gave you some flack for a couple weeks ago talking about why you guys still have Blackberries over any other smartphone. And Nevada. All right, I'm going to go gamble soon. And Arizona. Interesting. But congratulations. Congratulations, Contaps. And it was that icon, I'm pretty sure. No,
well,
cute penguin icon.
There are comments down there that say it's the penguin that sold them. So
no way, really?
They could be just going off of what you said during the show.
Sold your app.
Yeah, you gotta be careful about that. You don't want to do that necessarily. Contaps had me at penguin. Says so.
Oh,
jeez. Yeah, so see, be careful what you say.
I know. I got to be careful.
Could mean another vote for me. So this week we're going to talk about cloud storage. And I know in the past, in one of the earlier episodes, we talked about cloud music storage. This is definitely a broader thing. This is more kind of using kind of a in the cloud locker for your files, whatever those files may be. And there are definitely a few key players in this field. And Ron was going to do one of them. Ron was going to do Box.net. And unfortunately, I haven't had a whole lot of experience with Box.net. Mm-hmm. With him not being on the show today, I mean, at best, I'm going to be able to kind of give you an idea of what the service offers. And I actually have the Honeycomb app, so I can show that off. But I'm not going to get to that first. Might as well get to my app before I start selling Ron's app. My app is Dropbox, and I'm sure you've heard of Dropbox. It's a very, very popular in this space, and I've only recently been a Dropbox user. It took me a while to really understand why I needed Dropbox in my life, but once I started finding uses for it, and especially around working here at Twit and using it as kind of a storage locker for files that I might want to access at any of the computers in here, at the TriCaster or wherever, it's become indispensable. So just as far as the service itself, you get 2 gigs for free, 2 gigs of storage in the cloud for free. If you refer others, you get 250 megs per user that signs up based on your referral, up to 8 gigs. 8 gigs of storage, and I don't think that there's any sort of upper file size limit specifically. If there is, I haven't run into it, and I've uploaded really large files to my Dropbox. So there's that. I think that's super valuable, especially, you know, in my situation, it comes in handy all the time. If you want to get more storage than that, you can pay $9.99 a month or $99 per year for 50 gigs of cloud storage, or $19.99 a month or $199 a year. So you definitely get the discount if you buy per year. And that's for 100 gigs of storage online. Now, the mobile client is a little different than it works on the desktop. If you've used it on the desktop, you know that you've got kind of your folder that you've designated as your share folder. And anything that you drag into that folder will be automatically synced to any other computer that you have set up with your Dropbox account and set up to pull from that folder. So as you drop things into that folder, they just magically appear on those other computers. It's really cool that way. You don't ever have to think about it. The Android app actually works a little bit differently. I'll try and position this for you, Tony. I don't know if you can zoom in on that a little bit. I'll wait because I know it takes a while to zoom in. Thank you. And I will edit right here. I've got my little ticks on the side of the spreadsheet for my edit points. Okay, great. All right, cool. So I'll go ahead and launch the Dropbox app right now. And what you see right off the top are just kind of my folders specifically. You know what? Here, let me get the screen brightness up. There we go. Hey, that's better. So these are all the folders that I'm syncing my files to right now. The Android app does not work in the same way as the desktop app in the sense that you actually have to request a file to be downloaded onto your phone. As well, you have to request for a file to be sent up. So if I wanted to grab, you know, one of these images, I could long press on it and I could choose to open it and that'll just kind of show it to me. I could download it. I could share that. When you share, you've got a couple of options where you can kind of share a link and it gives you a link that you can send to people that automatically shows them whatever it is you're sharing when they click on it. So that's very handy. Or you can share the file itself. So you're actually kind of attaching that file through whatever means you choose to share it. So it's very handy like that. It also has some integration with the apps on your phone. So as you can see right up there, it's a PDF file that I've synced. It's a TriCaster brochure. I was like, what PDF should I drag onto here? But it automatically associates it as a PDF file format. And if I click on that, it downloads it and launches the appropriate application to kind of get you into that app that you've synced there. So it really tries to be kind of a seamless experience with how your phone is set up. Let's see here. You can upload directly from the app, which I don't use a whole lot. I mean, you can do it from other places in the sense that most Android apps that allow you to share things. If you're in the gallery, for instance, you could click an image and choose to upload it directly from there. But you can also do it from the app if you upload. And, it kind of takes you through the same steps. What kind of file do you want to send? And it'll take you into the appropriate application in order to do that. As well, you can create a new. So if you wanted to actually take a picture and have it sent directly from Dropbox, you could just go new, picture, and it'll launch your camera app. And you can kind of take the picture, and it's automatically kind of integrated within there. There really isn't a whole lot more to talk about how the app works. It's very straightforward. If you needed to create folders, you could do that, whatever. But you can use these folders however you want to pull from, to put information into, to create the share links, which is extremely handy for collaboration type uses. And for those security fiends out there that want to make sure that their data is protected, it's all SSL and AES 256-bit encrypted. So it's, on transfer, it's pretty encrypted as well. So hopefully that's safe enough for you. But that's Dropbox. I think the hard thing with these types of apps is they're, half of the appeal, not even half of the appeal, part of the appeal is the app. The majority of the appeal is the service that it provides. And Dropbox, as far as a service, I mean, after using it every day for probably the past 3 or 4 months, I don't know how I would go without it now that I'm so used to using it. I love it. So check it out, Dropbox. It's in the market, and you can start using it for free. So.
Okay. Well, I think the other competitor in the space is SugarSync.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard a lot about
SugarSync. Yeah, I do too. And I've been using it for a little bit now, and I also use Dropbox as well. And I'm going to show you. It's free in the App Store. Now, you get, for the basic service, you get 5 gigs for free to start. And the app looks a little something like this. And let me show you. I'm going to open this up. Now, what I've done is I've actually given myself a PIN, so I'm going to protect that. that, and I know that you can do that on Dropbox, but I'm not going to show you my pin, so one second, because I'm very protective of my phone now that I've famously lost one. But here's what it looks like. There's a little more going on, and now I've got all my devices. I've got my work laptop, my Mac Pro. I've got my Android device, and you can give yourself little icons for the various devices that you hook up to SugarSync. They're all hooked up together. This magic briefcase, anything that you put in there automatically syncs with all of the devices that you have synchronized to SugarSync. And it does basic things. You know, you can access your data from anywhere. You can keep folders and sync on your device. You can share files and folders, and you can securely back up your data. You can also automatically upload photos, and you go into your settings. So when you take photos, auto sync folders, just check that. So I've demoed an app before that when you take a photo, this is called Drop-In, and it'll go to Dropbox. Mm-hmm. Now, this one does it here automatically using
Nice.
SugarSync. So, and there's many options here to upload during Wi-Fi only. You know, you've got lots of different things. You can, here you go, use a pin, change your pin if you want even more secure pieces. Now, what I've done here too is I've actually, let's see if I could find it. I'm going to go to my device here. And actually, no, I'm going to go to a different device. I'm going to go to my Mac Pro because I've synced some music here. And what I can do is I could stream the music on my phone. Anybody like Hall & Oates?
Yeah.
So it's buffering.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's buffering.
Yeah.
take or leave Hall & Oates.
It does work, but I've got 3G going here. But anyways, if you want to...
Little Green Robot doesn't seem to like Hall & Oates.
I know. Can you hear it? Oh, can't hear it.
No.
Oh, because I don't have the volume.
Oh, yeah. You caught it before it was playing.
Well, anyways, there you go.
Hall & Oates.
So if you wanted to stream, you can upload any of your music and go ahead and stream it for later play. There you go. Adult education. Okay, I should probably stop that now too so that you don't keep hearing it for those of you who don't want to hear it. So that's kind of a cool little feature there. And then you can edit files using your favorite editing app, and you can also customize your auto sync options. It's really kind of full and a robust service. And
yeah.
I'm really surprised that a lot of people don't use this as much. I guess, you know, once something catches fire like Dropbox, there you go, right?
Mm-hmm. I like the look of this app. This app is just kind of visually a little bit more appealing than the Dropbox app.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they give you the cute little icons here. This is kind of fun. I like that. And anyways, yeah, you can upload, you know, any of your files from your phone to SugarSync. And the plans are, it's kind of interesting. There is actually, Tony, SugarSync has sort of how they stack up to the competition. I don't know if you have that link there, they say that there's a couple things that they do that Dropbox doesn't do, which is to, one of them they say is to back up any folder on your computer, which is kind of, I'm not quite sure. They say that Dropbox doesn't do that, and they also say that you can select any folder on your computer to sync.
That Dropbox doesn't do that?
Yeah, it says no. I don't know. I mean, this seems to be like an updated...
Yeah,
take it for what you want. I mean, this is SugarSync's website, so I'm sure Dropbox would, you know, kind of refute any of that. And then they also say they can send files. You were talking about send files of any size, and they say that no to Dropbox. But
okay, so then there must be an upper limit. I just haven't hit it yet.
Yeah,
I've uploaded some really large files.
So did I. Yeah. So I don't know. Have you uploaded a movie? Maybe movies or something like that.
Yeah, like I've uploaded like ProRes video for in QuickTime,
mm-hmm.
and I can't even remember how large that was. I think it was like 800 megs was one of them.
It sounds like SugarSync is cheaper.
Slightly cheaper.
It looks like it's a little cheaper than Dropbox for a comparable data storage size.
If you're buying.
Yeah, if you want to buy it, yeah.
I mean, they're virtually the same. And then now they're also saying that streaming music to a web browser is streaming music on, you know, your mobile device. For some of the mobile devices are limited, and it's unlimited on SugarSync. It's also unlimited on Dropbox for Android, so, and that's mm-hmm. what we care about here. So I don't know. I mean, it's a different looking app, but it's essentially the same service with slightly different prices, and mm-hmm. It just kind of depends on what you are used to. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I think for your app, Jason, the toolbar at the top with SugarSync and just dragging and dropping is really, really easy to do. And syncing is really easy as well. So I don't know. I don't think you can go wrong with either one.
Mm-hmm.
I like both of them, and I've been using both of them for a little while now. I don't know. I think both of them are really, really good. But you can vote for mine anyways, right?
Well, that's the thing. There are actually a lot of really devoted SugarSync fans out there. I was really mm-hmm. curious to hear you talk about it, because when it kind of came down to my decision, I went with Dropbox just because it's the one I've heard about mm-hmm. more than the other services. But, you know, as I've talked about them on like Twitter and stuff, I always get tons of responses about SugarSync. Like, you should really check out SugarSync.
Yeah.
It's the one that I opt for over, you know, Dropbox for a number
various
of reasons. So, so there's that. We should just quickly mention that we, you know, like I said, Box.net or Box is the name of the Android app, is another service that allows you to do this. And I mean, I haven't had a whole lot of hands-on experience with Box. I do know that they recently came out with a Honeycomb app, and it looks pretty, you know, pretty nice. It definitely looks better than the Dropbox app that that I also loaded on, you know, on my tablet. But they, let's see, what is the pricing on this? It's one user. It's free for one user up to 5 gigs with a 25 meg file size limit. And that just seems really, I mean, that wouldn't work for me to have a 25 meg file size limit.
Is that the free account?
That's for the free account.
Okay.
One user with 5 gigs of total storage, which isn't bad, but to cap the size of the files at 25 megs is just too small for what I would use this for. But if you get a business account, $15 per user per month for 300 to 500 users up to 500 gigs of storage with a 2 gig file size limit. So that's actually a pretty large file. Independently, and it can sync, you know, your desktop files. It has it has Google Apps integration, which I think they all kind of do more or less. I don't know if that's just referring to the sync and all that kind of stuff, but the Honeycomb app does look pretty nice. I haven't really had like a lot of hands-on time with Box on a day-to-day basis to be able to give it.
It sounds like, according to the website anyway, Box.net, they more persistently target business customers. So they have more, they have better advanced security features, sort of finer controls or, you know, version controls and all of that. So those are things that are more important, like, you know, more office document controls, those kind of things.
Okay.
So it sounds like it's a little bit more... documents and sort of that kind of thing.
Kind of businessy oriented.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we have one more app that I'm just going to mention really briefly, which is Walla from Lassie. And Walla came about, I heard about it, a couple months ago, when there was all this sort of, trouble with Dropbox and their files. And, they got into a little bit of trouble for, exposing information. And people at the time were looking for alternatives, and Walla was one. This is a very, very simple app, but what they say and what they tout is, securely encrypting, files as it goes to Walla immediately to and from your phone. They're touting, really secure, really secure service. This is really what, if you're looking at the video, when you launch the app, you just see your folders. You can open up, you can add more folders. You can go into a folder, and then you can simply do an upload here. But they say everything is really secure. And I do know a lot more people, I think, maybe in Europe use Walla than maybe they do out here. But it's another service that, if you are interested in, and if you're really... paranoid about security for cloud storage, they seem to back up that, they're very, very secure. So it's free to install. I have a free, I think it's like a 5 gig account right now.
Okay.
Let me see here. Features. Let me double check here. But, they all have they're free accounts to start. Oh, this is uploading right now. I'm uploading a photo. And then you can get, bigger. Free is store up to 1 gig is free.
Ah.
And then you have to pay a little bit more for 10, 25, 50, 100, 25, 250 gigs. And then there's also a business version as well. So when you start with 1 gig of storage for free, this gives you room for about 500 to 200 music files. But then you can get as much storage as you like.
Yeah, so. 1 gig for free, that's pretty low.
It's pretty small.
Yeah, pretty small.
I don't know, but if you're really into security, apparently, that's, yeah, right. You know.
Well, actually, I'm really happy that you mentioned that, because I hate to say I completely forgot about the Dropbox security snafu that happened. That was, I think that was in June, where for like 4 hours, anyone could log into any account with any password. So I'm, you know.
I wasn't trying to diss your app.
No, I'm happy that you mentioned that, because I guarantee you I would have been called out an email like, yeah, sure, don't mention that. I completely forgot about that. Maybe I should remember that as I use Dropbox more, but I bet you they're lot more secure now than they were before that
happened. I remember when this happened too, and I think most people were saying encrypt your files, you know. Always, you know, just encrypt them. And I still use it, even though I was a little panicked when all of this happened with Dropbox. But, you know, I don't think I put a lot of files in storage that are really super... important, that, you know, I don't put my social security number or things like that in the cloud.
I'm not using it to store ultra-sensitive data, but, you know, everybody has a different usage.
I mean, at the same time, you know, this Walla app, it looks like they all the files are just encrypted directly on the computer before it's uploaded, and that's, you know, a feature that many people want out of their cloud syncing app.
Yep. So. All right. Well, those are the services that we're going to cover on this episode. So if you would like to vote, you can. I'm changing up the URL just a little bit, but I promise this is the last time. bit.ly/AAApoll22.
Woo-hoo.
That last part is kind of the same, right? bit.ly/AAApoll22. And let us know what your favorite cloud file storage app is, as shown on the episode. We have all four options in there. What I'd love to see in the contents here is if you vote for the ones that we maybe didn't give as deep coverage, the Box.net and the Walla. If you vote for those, drop a comment in at the bottom and let us know kind of the reasons why you opt for that over the other ones, and kind of share your experience, because I'd love to know why. You know, what is it that draws you there as opposed to the others, and we can all kind of learn from that. So
I think Dropbox is going to take the lead.
I got to stop getting like the apps that are right off the top, like leading the category. I gotta go outside the box.
I had a good run at winning. It's Ron, really. I'm okay. You know, I feel like I've been a champion for a lot of the time. So, you know, I'm like, you know, I'll let you take the lead for a little bit, but I'm gonna come back strong. You know, in September. Yeah. Ron, on the other hand, you know, I want to go back and kind of look at who won what poll. And
we're gonna have to tally that all up and see.
You won a lot early on, and then I came back in the middle there. And I don't know about Ron. I think I'm not quite sure how many he's actually won. So we're going to have to take a look at that later.
Yeah, totally. So that's bit.ly/AAApoll22. Go ahead and check it out. Next week, we're going to cover lock screen replacements.
All right.
Which I think is a cool category.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one thing I actually really like about Sense 3 is the lock screen as you use that. But there are a lot of other lock screen kind of widgets and replacement apps out there that allow you to do cool things with the lock screen. So if you have any ideas about what you'd like us to cover, you know, let us know, and I'll give you the information there in a second. But before I do, that's it for the show. Nicole, thank you again for coming on a second week in a row. Really appreciate it.
No problem. No, Ron, he's always in New York.
That New York guy. Why don't you, if you don't mind, letting people know where they can find all the many things that you do.
Yeah, so I work for CNET. I write the reviews for them. We have a weekly cell phone podcast, dialedin.cnet.com, where we talk about Android and all other kinds of phones. If you want to check out all my other stuff, they're all on my about.me page. All my Twitter accounts on there, my Google Plus accounts on there. So about.me/Nicole Lee.
That makes sense. Thank you again, Nicole. Really appreciate it. And Eileen, what are your details?
Well, you know, you can find me on Twitter at EileenTV, but I'm all over G+. Just do a little search for me on there on G+. That's kind of where I've been living these days. And all the Android community has been really nice and answering questions.
It's been a great place for Android discussion in particular.
Absolutely.
I'm there as well. You can find me on G+, as well as Twitter, Raygun01. As for the show, that is it for this week. Leave us a voicemail. We'd love to play your voicemail on the show. 347-SHOW-AAA. You can send us an email or give us a video mail with a link at AAA@twit.tv. You can hit the show up on Twitter. That's at Android Show. Check out the show notes. We post those for every episode at twit.tv/AAA. And finally, you can catch us live every Monday from 5, usually ends up being 5:30 or so, to 6:30 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. And that's it for this week. Thank you, everyone. And we'll see you again next week.
See ya.